This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Why do you love The Lord of the Rings so much? As a fan of Tolkien, you've probably heard that question more than once. I know I have. In fact, after 3 years and nearly 200 episodes, I think it's hard for me to pin down just one reason why I love Tolkien's works. Tolkien himself once articulated what makes a really enchanting story in an essay called On Fairy Stories. We explored that essay some time back, and you can find it in episode number 95 at ringspodcast.com/95. Today we revisit that essay, but we will also follow Boromir's advice when he said, quote, "None of us should wander alone." I teamed up with the hosts at the Booked All Night podcast to explore a few ideas about great storytelling and why we love The Lord of the Rings so much. You can find the full conversation over at the Booked All Night podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes. And here's a curated snippet for you to enjoy. Now, let's wander.
One of the things I always remember someone saying about it was he's a really great example of building out lore as opposed to building out the world, right? You don't just be like, here's the elves and they believe this. He's like, okay, here's a people and here are the stories that make them believe what they believe, which ties into making it feel a little bit more realistic, which is always funny to say about fantasy where you're like, it's just not believable. Well, yeah, it's fantasy. It doesn't have to be 100%, but it does a little bit, which is part of the message that On Fairy Stories has, right? Where he's like, it still has to have that thread of credibility to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one of those principles in On Fairy Stories is that inner consistency of reality. Right. And that the world, the rules of that world have to be consistent in and of themselves. And he gives this great example of a green sun. Like, it's easy to say in fantasy, OK, here's a new world that you haven't experienced where the sun is green. But what does that actually mean from like a scientific standpoint to say that the sun is green? Like, would trees still have green leaves? Would the water still shine blue? Would the sky be blue? Like, you have to like think through what are all of those logical implications of saying that the sun is green. And that's what gives an inner consistency of reality within the world itself.
I love the example of the green sun because it's something that when you're kind of talking about like setting the scene, there are so many things that are just little things that'll pop you out of the story. And most fantasy readers obviously have a higher suspension of disbelief, but it'll be like this little thing that pops you out.
Yeah, I just building off of that, I love the one thing that came out of this that really stood out to me. Was the idea of secondary worlds and secondary belief. Because of the nature of language and because of the nature of words, what a chair is to me is not going to be what a chair is to you. So when I say chair, I might be thinking of like, you know, a nice wooden chair or something, and somebody else might come back with like a roller chair or something like that. And I think one of the beautiful things about fantasy, and Tolkien touches on this a bit near the end, is the idea that it does require that second person to kind of fill in the details of the world on their own. Fantasy done right is not an individual thing.
Yeah, I really love what you're saying there, Rob, especially the idea of the creation of the sub-world or the secondary world within the reader's mind. And I think for Tolkien, that's why literature was like the highest form of art, was because every other form of art, it took some of the audience members' imagination away. Like if you look at a piece of painting, you don't have to imagine the visual anymore. If you're watching a play or a drama, like part of your imagination doesn't have to be involved. But when you're reading literature and the author says, oh, there's a hobbit who lived in a hole, like brrrm, all of a sudden your imagination is activated and you're like, da 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 da. But then he has to say, no, this wasn't an oozy hole filled with worms or whatever. It was a hobbit hole. And so all of a sudden you're like, I've never encountered a hobbit hole before. Tell me more about this, Tolkien. And he goes on and on and on and on. And so it's like you have this dance back and forth between an author and a reader of saying, let me tell you this thing that you have experience with, but it's different than what you've experienced before. And here are some details. And we're going to sub-create together across the expanse of time and distance, we're going to sub-create this beautiful secondary world together. And I think for Tolkien, that was why literature was the highest form of art.
I love that example, too. So when I was an undergrad, one of the messages of our program was that writing is social, and it took me a very long time to understand what they meant. And that's one of the examples, is that when I give you a chair, you, the reader, imagine the chair. I can't paint the chair for you as a writer. And it was that, like a few other instances, that finally got me to come around to the idea that writing is social, because the rest of it, I'm like, no, it's not. I sit in a room and I do it by myself.
Yes, I'm an introvert. I don't want to be social.
I don't talk to anybody. What are you talking about? And I talked to like one other person about my writing. I have no idea what you mean by writing is social, but it is. And I think it was Stephen King who calls it a form of time travel in that instance, that, you know, Tolkien, the trilogy is published in like the late 50s, right? And here we are reading it today and still getting images. And how is that not a form of time travel if you really want to get like super bougie and theoretical about things? I agree. Like, that's part of what makes literature and writing one of these beautiful pieces of art. Because if I play, as you said, if I play music for you, you hear music. There's nothing for you to input there. And if I show you art, there's no art for you. But literature, especially if you get into a lot of critical theory, like reader response, we bring ourselves to literature. We bring our experiences, our education, and our world to that. So if, as Rob said, like, oh, you might be thinking of a rolling chair, but if I've never seen a rolling chair is not going to be what I think about. And if I've only ever seen a gross little hole, that gross little hole is going to be the only thing I'm ever thinking about instead of the hobbit hole. A tree is a perfect example of that. If I say tree, somebody's going to think of a pine tree, somebody's going to think of a willow tree, someone's going to think of a maple, someone's going to think of a palm. And it all just comes back to reader response, which is it depends on our relationship to that word and our experience with that word and that world.
Yeah, for some authors, I can imagine that would be highly frustrating, because you as an author have a vision in your mind of this story that you're trying to tell and the world that it takes place in, and you're trying to describe it, but yet words, as Rob was mentioning before, words and language and communication, it's not as easy as saying, let me telepathically give this vision in my mind into your mind, right? It's this whole, you're communicating through this textual language. If I may, there's a quote from Tolkien and On Fairy Stories that I want to read. It's a little bit long, but it speaks perfectly to this. And it's right at the beginning of his essay on fairy stories.
This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
He says this: the land of fairy story is wide and deep and high, and is filled with many things. All manner of beasts and birds are found there, shoreless seas and stars uncounted, beauty that is an enchantment, and an ever-present peril, both sorrow and joy as sharp as swords. In that land a man may, perhaps, count himself fortunate to have wandered, but its very riches and strangeness make dumb the traveler who would report it. And while he is there, it is dangerous for him to ask too many questions, lest the gates shut and the keys be lost. The fairy gold too often turns to withered leaves when it is brought away. All I can ask is that you, knowing these things, will receive my withered leaves as a token that my hand at least once held a little of the gold.
I love that.
I did love that quote.
Yeah, that was my absolute favorite quote.
If it's beautiful language, I mean, it's just like, it's so, like, Tolkien has these beautiful things that he wants to share. And he's like, look, you can't always pull these things out of this world of fairy, this world of fantasy, and communicate them into the real world. He's like, all I can offer you is, here are these withered leaves, but just trust me that once they were beautiful gold, and you just have to go to the land of fairy, and then you'll see the beautiful gold.
Right, like, you just have to let your mind wander there. And it's hard for some people. You know, sometimes, like, fantasy's not your genre, and so... oh my god, the amount of times that Maggie and I have heard this in workshops, I just don't do fantasy. And so it's like, okay, but you do stories, so does it make sense that this guy wants to kill somebody else based on what you know about him? And if you just, like, here are the leaves, and I promise you they were beautiful, and if you just come with me, you can see them alive on the tree, and it will be wonderful, and you will experience such a wonderful story. Why wouldn't you want to read something like that? Why wouldn't you want to experience something like that? He does say it in here, where a lot of people think that fairy stories and fantasy and genre and things like that are for children. I would like to say that we've come away from that. I think as we get older, we want to put things that we did as children away, because we were like, well, when I was a kid, I loved unicorns, but obviously that's only because they're for children. We don't bring that enjoyment with us.
The things that you encounter as a child, and it's kind of relates from both the acceptance that fantasy is derived for children and it's a childish aspect, but it's also the point of your life where you are the most open to fresh ideas, new ideas, something different, something strange. And if you're able to carry that from your youth through to adulthood and continue in sort of taking that fantasy into yourself, it leads a lot to the escapism that fantasy tends to provide for a lot of readers. And you're able to escape to this fantastic world of dragons and hobbits and elves. You can find peace in yourself and in reading this fantasy book. And that's something that a lot of people tend to give up if they don't continue on with that fantasy past childhood.
Yeah, he brought up some stuff there. One about children, that they have the unblunted edge of belief, right? Like the heightened sense of disbelief. Fairy stories should provide comfort, escape, and consolation. And I think fantasy often provides that, right? You are comforted because even if it takes a while, the bad guys usually get punished and get their comeuppance for whatever they have done. We have the escape, as you were saying, that our world sucks, but this fantasy world is really cool and pretty, and I would rather be here than what I am experiencing in the real world. And the consolation, like through your happy endings, you're kind of getting this justice according to your moral code.
Right. And it's not necessarily consistency or logical sense with our world, with the primary world, but it's more like in the rules of that world, the secondary world, are those rules consistent in and of themselves? And they need some explanation to them, but you don't have to go into like huge treaties, right? About all the things. And it's like elves and dwarves are different. Their natures are different. Their origin stories are different, and they have different natures and different motivations. And yes, we can paint with broad strokes, but at the end of the day, elves and dwarves are different, right? And they don't like each other. And it's not that they hate each other, that they're enemies. It's just that there's more like a sibling rivalry between elves and dwarves, right? And so it's like, well, what are the reasons for that? And, you know, sometimes you get little hints of the history, like in the Hobbit movies, you get a little bit of this, and in the Peter Jackson films, you get a little bit of that history, but it's not until you go and like you read the Silmarillion and you find out, oh, there was like some actual like slaying between elves and dwarves and other things beside, where you realize, okay, I can see now why these two races don't generally get together most of the time, and why it is such a unique thing that in the Second Age, the elves and dwarves are coming together. Oh, and also such a unique thing that elves and dwarves are working together in the Third Age, right? And so it's like, within the rules of the story of Middle Earth, it has to make sense. It's really tough to be like, okay, I need to now suspend the rules of my primary world and download a new set of rules and what makes sense in this world what actually makes logical sense to this world. And if the set of rules is different than the primary world, then I need to be aware of that. I need to be made known. That needs to be manifested to me as a reader.
Especially as it comes to fantasy, the history of the world, I believe, is important, which kind of comes back to the, like, build lore and not the world, right? Because as we reference why these two things don't get along with each other, we're referencing, like, okay, well, there was, you know, stuff with the Maiar, there was stuff with the slang, there was stuff with this treaty and this broken thing and that and then that and that and that. But if it was just, like, they just don't get along, that's less easy to, like, put yourself into, to just have this disbelief.
Right.
And
it's telling rather than showing, right? It's like, if Tolkien just said, hey, elves and dwarves don't like each other, well, okay, yep. Like, why? So what? Who cares? You know, like, okay, big deal. No, there has to be some depth and some complexity to that, and you have to show it. You have to show it just enough so that people understand, not so much, but just enough so that those rules make sense within the world.
Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to support the Lore of the Rings podcast, visit ringspodcast.com/member. If you found today's Wandering of Middle-earth to be inspiring, please share this episode with a friend. Lastly, if you would like to connect with me, I am most active on Threads. Find a link to my profile at ringspodcast.com and tap the at symbol near the top. And thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.